Hello, Bison. It's Brent Brozite, your Director of Development at Nichols College, signing in from the hills of Dudley, Massachusetts. Welcome to today's Nichols Alumni Podcast, featuring my guest, 2007 Bison alumni Mike Matros. After graduating from Nichols, Mike went on to get his Master of Public Administration in Fire Science. Although Mike is a firefighter and a paramedic in the town of Sudbury, Massachusetts, he's also the executive director and founder of the Heroes Cup Foundation. For those who haven't heard of it, the Heroes Cup is a charity hockey tournament started in 2016 in a partnership with the Boston Bruins. The tournament has over 1,800 players forming 80 teams from 27 states and 3 countries, as well as several Boston Bruins alumni who participate each year. We'll let Mike explain a little bit more about the tournament himself, so without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Welcome. Thank you for having me here.
All right, so why don't we start off, what are you doing back on the hill today?
Well, I have, from the what the firemen would say, sounded the alarm and recruiting the college for some help for both the foundation as well as my business. The college has stepped up and is really putting a lot of volunteers in, a lot of getting really involved in the program itself. And it's been great. It's been a very busy day meeting the whole staff of the college, having 4 or 5 meetings in a day. It's been great, but really engaging the college this year, looking to bring back to the college.
Well, we appreciate you coming in. So in regard to the tournament and the foundation, tell us a little bit about what this tournament is and how it got started.
Yep. So the Heroes Cup got started because I was running the Boston Marathon, and it was a way for me to have my fundraising. My fire department, Sudbury Fire, played Framingham Fire in a single one-off game. At that time, I had veterans reaching out to me, asking me for a warm-up game. I had met a lot of really cool people who were in the same mission to try and help and support me for a single game. Well, that turned into, let's have a tournament. Let's get together with these guys from around the country who I'd only see at funerals. Let's get together for a reason other than a funeral to kind of support their causes and get behind them. So first year, we had 54 teams. And then we had 80 teams, 90. Actually, this year's numbers are even bigger than what was reported. We now have 110 teams and over 2,000 first responders that come to the city, with about 10,000 people playing throughout the weekend. The whole event will raise about over $1 million in 3 days for 70, 80 different charities.
That's fantastic. Did you ever in your wildest dreams imagine this thing taking off as much as it did? And where do you see this thing going in the future?
So, no, I didn't envision it taking off like this, but I certainly don't say no to anybody. So the overwhelming amount of support has grown this foundation to where it's at now. But in the future, we've already signed contracts with the Tampa Bay Lightning. We're looking to go, so we'll be in Tampa in August with the Lightning. We are looking to have a tournament in Nashville with the Predators. We were in talks with Winnipeg about a tournament there in 2022. So all the NHL teams are really kind of getting on board. It's finding the ones that have the right resources, the right place to host a tournament. But I see this being very much a national event that goes around the NHL circuit and raises money for fire, police, military.
That's unbelievable. I have to think that as a business major, some of the things you learned here at Nichols had to help you with some of the organization and the business aspects of putting on such a big and growing tournament. Can you take us back to your college days a little bit and tell us about your experience here at Nichols and how the things you learned here might have helped you build and grow this tournament over the years?
Yeah, so I came to Nichols as a management major, fully with the intentions of taking over a family business. And 9/11 happened after my uncle died his friends all died on 9/11. He called in sick on 9/11.
And he was a firefighter?
He's a firefighter, FDNY, stationed in Manhattan. He was supposed to work on 9/11, called in sick, didn't wake up till like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, realized what had happened. All of his friends, his current engine company, as well as the guy who was working for him because he called in sick, all died on 9/11. FDNY retired him shortly after that because the survival guilt he had was just a little bit too much. After golfing with him, when I was here at Nichols, I was golfing with him, and I was telling me all the stories about why he loved the job of a firefighter. I said, Uncle Freddie, if you could do it again, would you? And he said, in a New York minute. Well, I golfed with him on a Saturday. I came back to campus on Sunday. Monday morning, I applied to the Dudley Fire Department. Even though I was a management major for business, I said, this is something I'm going to do, and this is something I have to do. And so the chief hired me that night and said, well, we have an academy opening starting next week. So everything happened within a week time. Totally changed my whole life direction. But, you know, I stuck with my business degree. And I told my father, who was a big corporate CEO, I'm not looking to go into business. And he laughed. He said, all right, no problem. He pursued what I wanted to. And now he laughs at me. He's like, hey, how's that work out for you? Not going into business. You're running two different companies. And
wow.
I had a business when I was here in the dorm, running out of my dorm room. So
what were you doing? I heard a story, a little bird, one of your former professors told me about that a little bit, but, what kind of business was it?
So I was running a business, finishing garages, doing high end garages. People would want to match their garages to their Corvette or, their Porsche and have really nice high end garages. So I was running that business and my roommates all worked for me. They took classes in the morning. We'd go work in the afternoon. They'd come back to campus. Every one of them had money in their pocket. They were happy as can be. And, you know, for a college student, it was great. And as soon as I graduated, that was my job when I was in school. And the professor and the teacher staff always helped me throughout the way with that business. And once I graduated, ran the business for about 2 years and bought my first house for cash.
Unbelievable. I remember talking to you. Actually, I met you at your high school, I think it was. When you were a high school student, I was an admissions counselor.
Yep.
And I do remember after Professor Hilliard kind of chatted with me a little bit that you had to have some kind of permission to park your, a trailer with your equipment here on campus?
So in Budley, I think. I had to get permission from campus to park my commercial equipment in the back parking lot, so I got commissioned to do that. I ran the business out of the back parking lot. And I had a trailer and everything set up and a couple work trucks back there. And when my roommates got out of class, they'd hop in the work trucks, they'd hook up the trailer, they'd take all our equipment back. And the dorm room was a pretty good storage facility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember you telling me, too, about kind of how you got the business. You'd go into developments. And I remember thinking at the time, like, wow, this you're light years ahead of where college students normally were. So no, that's we mentioned Professor Hilliard. Were there any other professors or you know professors you particularly remember that you'd like to give a shout out to?
He would be the biggest one for sure. I still use his mentality, and if he's listening, I did buy my first Corvette per his advice. So you know he gave me a lot of good answers, and you know. Really helping guide me along the way. But in general, the staff here was, you know, I didn't realize how good an education I had because when I went and got my master's degree, I did that online. And that was very academic. That was research, write a paper. It was very what you'd expect of college. And then I look back and, you know, that level of having an offsite, having a teacher to just completely derail, talk about their professional experience and their work life meant more to me than anything that I learned in textbooks. So I couldn't tell you one, you know, textbook I read while I was in college because there were so many of them. You forget the class names, but I could tell you almost every life story that those professors told me. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that 100% guided me to, you know, doing more, doing better.
A lot of our students mentioned that one of their biggest challenges is time management. And I'm not sure the exact number these days, but at one point I remember hearing at least half of our student body played a varsity sport or an NCAA club sport. Based on a lot of the interaction I've had with students, a lot of students own their own business. They're leaders at clubs here on campus, involved in clubs here on campus. They're no stranger to presentations, group work, conferences, internships. We have a group of students right down in Miami now who are working the Super Bowl for the week.
Cool.
That's not bad. So you're a full-time firefighter. You organize a tournament, which is probably a job or three in itself. You've completed the Boston Marathon, what is it, three times?
Five.
Five times. You coach youth hockey, baseball coach. So I'm guessing you're pretty good at managing your time. Maybe you could share a few of your tips on prioritizing, multitasking, and how you're able to juggle so many things and keep a good work-life balance.
Well, like anybody, that's a challenge. But when I came to Nichols, I had and still have a learning disability. And the ability to learn how to manage ADD from that perspective and handle multiple things, I learned how to use instead of it as a weakness, as a strength. So for me to multitask, I feel it comfortable. if there was a time period in my life where I didn't have a lot going on, that's, you know, would be bad. But for me, I work the best when there's two or three jobs, there's a million phone calls, there's a million emails to do, because downtime is not an option. So when it comes to prioritizing, you need to just put your, you know, all I do is simply put my priorities in focus. And I keep myself so busy that time management, if you don't have time management, you fall on your face.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something I definitely learned from here. And it's something that I would say is probably my best asset to, you know, I have to be busy. In other words, to make it short, I have to be busy. Otherwise, everything will crumble.
So what's the toughest part or aspect about organizing and putting on this tournament for you?
Well, first responders like to do everything last minute. That's mm-hmm. always a challenge.
When the bell goes off, yeah.
Well, someone asked about that, and I said, these guys, their career, when they come to work, they don't know what they're doing in 30 seconds. Like, they don't know what the job is going to be in 30 seconds from now. So to get them to do anything in advance, booking hotel rooms, registering teams, is a project, mm-hmm. is the ultimate time management, and, you know, they're getting better about it. But that part is definitely challenging, but you're also... I'm dealing now. I have people from all across the globe. We have people that teams that don't speak any English. So I have a team from the UK, you know, that's, we communicate with through them. I have, you know, there's some Canadian teams that are very heavy accents, very hard to talk with. And, you know, it's creating a nice dialogue that, you know, little challenges, but they're certainly good challenges, but sponsor engagements, There's a lot of challenges that come with running a nonprofit, but I don't know. I wouldn't even know where to start in terms of, you know, what's the most challenging, but everything has its own challenge in different regards.
Let's talk about partnerships a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that's really important to a lot of organizations. And one of the things that we try and teach our students, for all that said about the millennials and the generation today, I think one of the biggest skills that they have is through social media or whatever, they're very good at reaching out and connecting and being aware of partnerships, whether it's for brands or celebrities or whoever. So how do you go about, you know, starting a tournament where two teams are playing, bringing it up to what it is now? Can you describe a little bit about, like, the partner building process that mm-hmm. you use?
Well, obviously, my biggest partner being the Boston Bruins. The Bruins, after our first year, saw the event and said, we want to help. So they kind of bridged that gap for me, where they approached me and said, we want to get involved. We want to know. And honestly, at first, my guard was up, because what do the Bruins want with us? Well, you know, is this something to sell tickets? What's the catch here? Right? So got through that, settled the contract with the Bruins. And now the Bruins, allowing the Bruins to do what they do best, allows me to do what I do best. And, you know, the ability to reach out to sponsors, to get involved, to send a message out. I mean, they have 30,000 people every single day in the garden, and they could really hit a number of people fast. And their marketing campaigns, allowing the partners to really run with it, helped grow this tournament to where it's at. The current players saw that partnership, they get involved. When you're getting messages from Bergeron or Tuca, what can we do? How can you help? Yeah. I'll take you up on that offer.
That's a good day.
And then, you know, partnerships as far as sponsors go. The sponsors really help drive the tournament, really come in, and they play a critical role. And, you know, sometimes it could be they simply just want to say thank you. Other times they're maybe selling a product or a service, and you know what? If they're stepping up to support someone, you're going to want to support them. So the partnerships go both ways, but 1,000% building partnerships and relationships is a key. And you talked about the social media part, which is kind of funny, but this whole tournament was built off $10 in social media, Facebook advertising, and the network of people. And so as the tournament grew, I started continuing down that road with social media, aggressive social media, and we had some interns who reminded me just how old I am because I'm on Facebook. Yeah. Apparently, Facebook is a older generation thing.
Facebook and then Instagram, now that's old, and Snapchat's the new thing, and who knows where it's going.
I just got showed the other day for the first time TikTok. I learned about something totally new, but it's always evolving, always changing, and you know, it's it's good to have those kind of partners to keep you on your edge, keep you growing and growing continuously.
How do you kind of keep up with things? Do you have, you know, interns of a college age or, you know, for example, I had mentioned to you even this podcast, you know, a person younger than myself, Nichols alumni had mentioned you should really look into starting this up. And today the biggest nerve center, I guess, and the thing I learned the most about putting this up and finding royalty-free music comes from a student. So, you know, as somebody who, I don't want to say you're on the older side, but older than a college student for sure. You know, how do you embrace the younger generation in terms of helping this thing go?
There's a skill set that I can't even begin to comprehend that they bring to the table, and vice versa. So, you know, while they might not know, like maybe it's networking or something that they fall short on, or talking to the public, things like technology, things like better organization, things like volunteer management systems, these guys know, and they've known it and love it. And, you know, the younger kids having interns every year really helps bring a whole nother level of organization and bring stuff that I don't even think about and gets me to think, kind of give them the ability to run with it. All right, go ahead. I trust you. I have no idea what this is, but I trust you. Let's and that proves beneficial year after year. And, you know, every year I look to have a couple interns help with the foundation. This year I'm going to be engaging the college, you know, a whole army of students because I want to see what that younger generation can do that I'm missing. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm going to engage the whole student class at a Bruins game, bring 50 students to a Bruins game. All right, let's make the most of First Responder Night. How can we make an aggressive marketing campaign? How can we make a program that's really going to be beneficial to first responders? That's what they're in school for. Let's put them to work.
Are those going to be sport management students, marketing students, just open to anybody? Do you know yet, or is it still pretty early?
It's still pretty early. I'm not sure. It will be a specific class that they'll be doing, but we'll be opening our internship. We just opened up a couple of new internships for all majors, from hospitality to sports management to, well, nonprofit management in general. There's a job for everyone, you know, and at the rate we're growing, we don't turn down help because we can use it. So,
and I think you hit on a great point. You know, a lot of times when students are looking for internships, companies are thinking, you know, what can I get out of them? But it, you know, to have an internship where students are dealing with someone who actually understands, we're teaching them too, and we're giving them skills, and we're kind of making the next generation. I think that's such a healthy mindset, you know, for any company or organization to have. It's awesome to hear that, and I'm looking forward to hearing, you know, how these what these students bring to your table.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little bit before, I guess I should ask you, what is it like to work with members of the Boston sports community? I'm sure over the years you've hung out with and maybe skated against some of the athletes that you grew up watching. Can you recall any particularly cool stories about some of the experiences you've had over the years hanging with some of the pretty well-known athletes in the area?
You know, they're known for their ability on the ice. They're known for their sports skills, and, like, that's what you perceive them as. And I think one of the coolest things, especially getting to know the current team and stuff, is, like, Brad Marchand, you know, learned about my kid. My kid likes to play hockey, and he's got such a tough shell when it comes on the ice, from fighting people to being, you know, being typical Brad. And, you know, he just thought it was cool what we were doing, learned the whole story, wants to help. But meanwhile, he took out my 9-year-old son out for public skating. Like, these guys are as real as they get. You see them on TV, you see them in a different light, but seeing them outside or seeing Ray Bourque come and say, I love what you're doing, I want to help. How can I get involved? What can I do? And really having him say, how can I help you is humbling, because usually you're coming to him for help. Hey, Ray, can you put out a tweet? Can you do this? Can you do that? And he's doing the opposite. Hey, what can I do to help you? And, you know, the thing that is most powerful to me with working with all the sports figures is just they're real people. They want to help. They want to get involved. And, you know, it really is very humbling, but rewarding working with them, because there's a totally different light than what you see on TV, what you see on the ice, what you see on the field.
It has to be pretty intimidating your first time, you know, meeting an athlete who you may have watched growing up and that sort of thing. How do you get over that intimidation? Whether I feel like whether it's you're dealing with a client or somebody that you're working with or a former Bruin, how do you kind of put aside that intimidation factor, I guess, and say, you know what, I just have to kind of man up and do what I'm going to do. What's the mindset of that?
I think that comes with experience. Obviously the first couple times it's very humbling, and then you, like I said, you get to know them as a person, and then you can talk to them face to face like this. Like, you get to get over that lump, but at the end of the day, they have the same issues you're dealing with. They're dealing with the same things. So just talking to them like normal people is the best advice to go from there. You know, they put their pants on the same way as we do every day. You know, they do the same things we do every day. They deal with the same struggles we deal with every day, and, you know, might be on a different level, but it's the same. And handling it like that and handling it like a normal relationship certainly builds it normal, and I think they appreciate a level of normalcy, talking to them like a friend, you know, and being involved with them normally, and them letting them help you when they want to, and you help them, and, you know, normal relationship bridges that gap for you. All of a sudden it takes down any of the barriers that, you know, this guy's got did X as a player, you know.
And now, do they skate with the teams or do they have their own team?
So during the Heroes Cup, we make it a fundraising incentive. Our top teams that raise the most money have professional players playing on their team as an incentive. So we incentivize them to raise more money for their own charity. So every team is playing for their own charity. So it's just like the Boston Marathon, where it's one event that benefits so many charities. But for us to motivate a team to raise $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, there has to be something at stake. Well, what's at stake is PJ Stock said, I'm going to join that team and play with the team all weekend long. You know, having an enforcer like PJ in the corner certainly helps. And that's the testament to these guys. They really want to get involved and they want to help. So we use it as a fundraising motivation, fundraising chip. Meanwhile, it's their way of saying, let's go play some hockey for the weekend. So we will have, you know, various celebrities playing throughout. And then we also have a Bruins alumni game that'll be playing. The Bruins alumni will play our top 20 individual fundraisers against each other, which will be kind of neat, but it's just an excuse, a way for them to get together and get involved and be helpful.
That's great. As somebody who's taken a passion and turned it into something which has had such a positive influence in your community and benefits so many people, what would your advice be for students or recent alumni who are getting ready to graduate or taking their first job and they're looking to go out and make their mark in the world? What advice would you give to them if you were sitting across from them having coffee?
Don't say no. That movie, Yes Man's a powerful, powerful world. You never know what kind of opportunities are going to present you. One of the guys at the firehouse said to me, he said, hey, because I was trying to run lose a little weight. He's like, hey, why don't you run the marathon? You know, and what am I going to run a marathon? I've never ran before in my life. So Boston firefighter died. And he's like, we need someone to run the marathon and we have a charity spot to fill. Okay, I will. Here's an opportunity. Yes. And by running one marathon, saying, all right, I'm committed, I'm going to do this, it led me down a totally another path by taking that fire job and steering away from a, you know, family business that was ultimately was I thought was my career path. All of a sudden, in one day, I said, nope, this is something I'm doing different. I've said yes, and yes is a powerful word. No is very easy to say. Yes is a very powerful word because, you know, take those opportunities that are in front of you. That's I can tell anybody. You don't know where it's going to get you, but I promise you it's there for a reason.
It's hard because when students are looking for a job and they're going out and figuring, oh, this is my first job, they think they're going to be there forever. And they think, well, I don't want to make the wrong decision because I'm going to be locked into this. But, you know, I think you're a testament to the fact that different roads open up and there, you know, the world is a wide place. There's a lot of different areas you could go. So I think that's a great thing for students to hear. How long does it take to train for a marathon? That's especially as somebody who's a non-runner. How long did it take before you could actually get there and get on the starting line?
Probably about 6 months of real training. Training season for Boston particularly starts in November. It's a very cold training season. A lot of runs are through the snow and through the ice. So it's putting your head down and doing it, you know, and that kind of, you know, getting there. But honestly, Boston's the ultimate marathon, but it's great because there's, for 26 miles, you have people shoulder to shoulder cheering you on. What's better than that? And you're going to get through it. So if you can run a little bit, you'll get through it. People, you see people crossing the finish line and don't have legs, amputees. I mean, the stories that come out of an event like that are unbelievable. So if they could run with as an amputee, you better believe I'll run with them.
So before I let you go, how can folks get involved with the Heroes Cup tournament? I know you're doing a lot to involve Nicholls College students and interns, but whether it's getting a team together to play in the event or volunteering to help out, sponsoring the event, or simply attending the event, what's the best way for people to go about supporting this cause?
All right, so a couple notes on that. In terms of getting involved playing in the tournament is exclusive to fire, police, or military. So, and we have a long waiting list of teams, so we couldn't really take teams in, but the best way to get involved is simply volunteering, so coming out supporting. Come and attend to one of our events. Come see on Friday night, come see Gary Sinise and the Lieutenant Dan Band play. Like, that's going to be a really cool experience. Or, you know, simply just getting involved. We post all of our social media on almost every handle. You can find us, all our updates. Volunteers, we have a volunteer sign up on our website, heroescuphockey.com. Also, heroescupfoundation.com has all the current events, whether it be skills camp with Billy Jaffe or golf tournament, whatever the event being, everything is there. Certainly reach out to the college. I know the college will have a really good volunteer activations and running through that, and that'll be all over the college social media as well. So if you want to get involved, there's a million ways to get involved.
And so it's not just the tournament. I mean, this is a year-round thing.
Year-round, nationwide.
Unbelievable. Well, if anybody wants to get involved, definitely hit us up here at Nicholls or go to the social media. It sounds like a fantastic cause and a very exciting thing. So great stuff. Mike, thank you for joining us today on this Nicholls Alumni Podcast. So it's from the guidance office of Marlboro High School to being the Grand Marshal of the Marlboro Parade. It's unbelievable to see what you've accomplished, and thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed hearing Mike's story and the story of Heroes Cup Hockey on today's episode. I think Mike is a great reminder that it's never too late or too early to get involved and make a difference in something which you care about. Whether that's your community, your church, or your alma mater, it's easy to make the world a better place through both big and small actions. This would be a good time to remind you, if you or someone you know would like to get more involved at Nicholls and help us continue to move the chains as we innovate and grow, I'm not a hard guy to get a hold of. Hit me up at Nicholls or through LinkedIn, and we can get you involved here on the Hill. Until next time, go Bison. Wow, look at that.